This week, six African countries on an ambitious peace mission to help end the Russia-Ukraine war. With both sides far from a peace deal, who and what will the African leaders bring to the table? Also, is South Africa in danger of losing its benefits under a massive US-Africa trade deal? We'll look at why a group of US lawmakers wants the Biden administration to get tough on Pretoria over its ties to the Kremlin. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and a warm welcome to you. This is Straight Talk Africa coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. Could an African-led peace mission bring an end to Russia's war in Ukraine? And why is South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa so confident that after nearly a year and a half of fighting in Eastern Europe, this mission can hammer out a deal to end that war? Now, here is what we know about this initiative. The mission will be led by South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. It will involve six African countries: Senegal, South Africa, Uganda, Zambia, Congo Brazzaville, and Egypt. The African leaders will travel to Russia and Ukraine, reportedly in coming days. Both presidents Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky are said to have separately agreed to host the African leaders to try and reach a deal to end this war. And it is time now for our reporters segment. And I'm joined here in studio by reporters from VOA's Russia service, Danil Galporovich and Maria Ulyanovsky. She's a journalist with VOA's Ukrainian news service. Danila and Maria, a warm welcome to both of you. Thank you for joining us here on Straight Talk Africa. I'm really happy that the two of you can come in here and give us some perspective on the other side of this conversation. And I want to start with you, Danila. How serious does the Kremlin appear to be taking this African-led mission?
Putin is very pleased to have this mission. He is commenting on this every day, almost. For example, tomorrow he is meeting with the president of Algeria, and he today announcing that he mentioned that in some time there will be an African mission. We will speak about peace efforts for Ukraine. We will speak about grain deal, because they are receivers of Russian and Ukrainian grain. So, and Russia is constantly blackmailing Europe and Ukraine and United Nations with quitting the grain mission. So he is pleased to receive them, because in this mission, his African, I would say, friends, kind of equalizing the aggressor and the victim, Russians and Ukrainians, because this is all clear, and General Assembly of United Nations demonstrated it, who is aggressor and who is the victim. But this peace mission is kind of saying equally, speaking equally to Zelensky and to Putin, and many of them are dependent of Russia more than only these countries. We know about Sahel countries, we know about French-speaking Africa. So for him, it's an opportunity to say, yes, we're open for any, you know, peace talks and everything, but just Ukraine should accept so-called new realities. And that's exactly what he told Chinese envoy Li Hui, who was in Kiev and in Moscow as well. And I remember that last weekend, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa spoke with Beijing's leader, with Xi Jinping, and Xi Jinping kind of blessed this African mission. So we can say that Putin is very comfortable with this mission.
These are friends coming, as he sees.
Of course.
Maria, the message from the Ukrainians to the Africans, particularly South Africa, up till now has been choose your friends wisely. We saw the foreign minister of Ukraine wrap up an Africa tour as well, but he was essentially saying pick a side. Pick our side. Does President Zelensky seem confident that the Africans will be true and honest brokers in this process?
Well, I can't speak for President Zelensky, but from what it looks now, it's not a very transparent process, because we see that a lot of countries from Global South want to participate in this new deal of renegotiating the world order, so to say, right? And we see China proposing their peace deal, we see African countries proposing their peace deal, we also see some initiatives from Indonesia and whatsoever, India, and all these countries, they propose, they started talking about peace deals right when the counteroffensive in Ukraine started. Correct. So it also stayed, like, this timing is very peculiar in this situation, because when Russia starts losing on the battlefield, we hear a lot of talks about the necessity of bringing peace. We also see a lot of civilian infrastructure destructions and bombing, and it intensifies every time. So in the case of this African mission, I think what is also important for Ukrainian side is the choice that the African mission made by going to Moscow first. It's also very symbolic for Ukraine, because they see that this, I totally agree with Danila here, that this brings equality between the aggressor and the victim. It's like both sides of the war that are equals, which is not the case, because this is an unprovoked war by Russia. And by trying to put two parties to the table of negotiations, absolutely distracts attention from what is actually happening, and it's the aggressive war that Russia brought to an independent state of Ukraine. So Ukrainians are very cautious about what's happening with these negotiations, but also I know that President Zelensky's administration is very open to anyone who wants to participate in this kind of peace negotiations on the terms that Ukraine offered with the President Zelensky plan, peace plan for, which includes 10 different points, which are very universal, which are basically abided by the UN Charter, which most of the countries agree with, and they include the world's first necessities, such as nuclear security, food security, energy security, ecological security, and also some securities for Ukrainian state in terms of territorial integrity and sovereignty.
Danila, we don't have a lot of time here. Just briefly, but what would, in any potential peace talk or peace deal here, what would Russia be willing to give up? I mean, would those concessions, is there any world in which those concessions would include Crimea?
Publicly, nothing. I don't think that in Putin's interest is, it's not in Putin's interest to say anything that he's ready to give up. I mean, he started this war because of some insecurity inside the country. Not only his dreams to maybe rebuild Soviet Union or something, he was insecure inside, and he needs to grab the power inside. So he cannot feed the public with, okay, now we probably maybe will give up something. No, he just pronounced these occupied territories as Russian territories. He cannot do it now. I mean, he needs to some cover of these peace talks to support the idea that he is not totally, you know, agree for you know, to go into the war forever with Ukraine. But I don't think he's ready to give up anything.
Maria, finally, what would you see as being the biggest challenge for this African peace mission? What do they need to accomplish for this to seem credible to the Ukrainians and to the rest of the world?
Well, most of all, to recognize the international laws, the UN Charter, which most of the African countries are party to. And Ukraine has stated it very clearly, that Ukraine is not ready to give up its territories, because when Ukrainians deliberate those territories, they see rape, they see murder, they see torture and death that Russia brings onto those territories. So when, for some countries that are not close to Ukraine, it's just a story on the news, for Ukrainians, it's a very personal story, because everybody has someone who has lived in the occupied territories and know the terror that it brings. So I would say that if African countries want to be taken seriously in this, the next step for the peacemaking plan would be the peacemaking summit that Ukraine will propose. And Ukrainians want to introduce a plan so that any country that wants to participate in this peace negotiations can actually take responsibility for some points in this peace negotiation plans. For example, Africa can be responsible for fulfilling the food security plans, which is in Africa's interest as well. So I would suggest look more into that.
This is all very fascinating. We'll be keeping a close eye on this, as I'm sure the two of you and your services will as well. Danila Galparovich from the Russia Service and Maria Ulyanovsky from VOA's Ukrainian Service. Thank you both of you for your time. I really appreciate it. Well, still ahead, we asked people in Uganda whether they think an African-led peace mission to Russia and Ukraine will help end the war. Is it a good idea? We put that question to people on the street.
No, I do not think it would be effective for an African-led peace mission to hold peace talks or to reconcile Russia and Ukraine.
We cannot have every conflict resolved, but we try our best.
Yes, I do. I believe that African leaders can foster and start peace between Russia and Ukraine.
I don't think they can give an ear to the African leaders, because even us as Africans, we have failed here.
I do not think Africa holds much of a voice in the developed world. I don't think they would listen to us because they do not think it's our area of expertise.
If an African leader came to try and put this conflict to sleep, he would be bringing a different perspective from the Europeans.
There's been a lot of conflict in Africa, and I think that has taught many African leaders how to address such circumstances of peace, and just to come up with a way that leads to both parties to be pleased.
And there are so many wars here in Africa, like in Congo, Somalia, South Sudan, and they have failed. So I don't think they can give them an ear there in Europe.
Ugandans, they're expressing their views on this Africa-led peace mission to Russia and Ukraine. Well, stay with us. After the break, we're going to take a closer look at what this peace mission can actually accomplish. Plus, a letter from a bipartisan group of U.S. senators urging the Biden administration to punish South Africa over its ties and dealings with Russia. My guests are standing by to discuss and analyze all of that after the break.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
World Refugee Day shines a light on the rights, needs, and dreams of refugees by helping to mobilize political will and resources to assist refugees in order for them to not only survive but also thrive. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will mark this day by looking at ways to support and empower this community, especially women and girls who are most affected by wars around the world. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
So I think it's a good idea. It's a very, very good idea.
I think it's a good idea that the African delegation goes to Ukraine and Russia to negotiate for peace.
I think the delegation is a good idea However, the situation is very complicated.
I don't see the reason always all bring problems to people. See, people like kids, women, suffering because of the war.
When has peace never been a good idea? The war is affecting everybody. It's affecting us, even as Africans. So we need to work together to build a better tomorrow. There's much, much bigger problems we have. We have climate change that we should be working towards striving for, making sure that our kids have a much better future. So let's fix this.
I think everyone deserves peace. Peace needs a chance. The Ukrainians need peace. The Russian soldiers fighting deserve peace. The fuel price for us needs peace. It's complicated because I disagree with our country's stance. I feel like we miss key opportunities to end the war. So I feel like this delegation feels more like an appeasement, because it's not like other countries haven't done peace delegations before, and it's not like this peace delegation will change much.
Well, South Africans, they're expressing their views on this proposed peace mission by African countries led by President Cyril Ramaphosa. And that is what we're discussing today. What can this mission actually accomplish? And as South Africa prepares to lead this six-country initiative, there appears to be growing frustration in Washington over Pretoria's relationship with the Kremlin. A bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers want the Biden administration to get tough with South Africa, starting with the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. And AGOA, of course, allows dozens of African countries to export products to the United States duty-free. And South Africa is the largest beneficiary. Under AGOA, it exported a total of about $3 billion worth of goods last year alone. It's also set to host this year's AGOA summit. Now, this bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers wants the AGOA summit to be moved from South Africa in response to what they call that country's deepening military relationship with Russia. In a letter to the Biden administration, officials, the senators seem to suggest that South Africa is in danger of losing its trade benefits under AGOA. So we're going to discuss this. We've got a lot to get through. My guests are Ambassador J. Peter Pham. He is a fellow at the Atlantic Council and the former United States Special Envoy for the Sahel region. Also with us, joining us remotely, is political analyst Renee Lake. He's based in Washington, D.C. Welcome to both of you, gentlemen. Ambassador, I'm going to start with you. You were, of course, as we said, the U.S. Special Envoy for the Sahel region. What do you make of this peace mission to Russia and Ukraine? I mean, what's the best that can be hoped for here?
Well, one always, as a diplomat, one always favors talks and communication, but let's be very honest, Haiti. This so-called peace mission of African leaders has no credibility. It is at best an exercise in theatrics, a little too late, I think, for some of the issues we'll talk about with South Africa. But it's no credit. In order to be a peacemaker, one has to be an honest broker. And these are not honest brokers going to a situation to break routine. You've got South Africa, and we can get into all the letters from the members of Congress and other actions, but certainly not a neutral player in this, holding exercises with the Russian military on the anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine. You've got President Museveni of Uganda, whose son and presumptive heir publicly declared himself, "Call me a Putinist." And you have others with Egypt, which was discovered to have been trying to manufacture 40,000 rockets for Russia. So these aren't honest brokers. The Ukrainians will certainly receive them, but I don't expect much out of this.
The Africans would argue, of course, that they have a lot at stake and they want to be part of the conversation. Rene, what's your take? I mean, why is this mission happening now, and why these six African countries?
Yeah, it's very interesting what the ambassador was saying, because in general, historically, that's been my kind of a position with a lot of those African initiatives in Middle East and other things. Very often is more like some kind of marketing and some kind of communication for internal purpose, by the way. from those head of state. But for once, I'm not going to say this is a credible mission. I'm not going to go as far as that. But I'm going to say there is some good reason for both parties to listen to them, and mainly for the most important party, which is basically Russia, because as an invader. Because if you look at the five key votes done at the UN, globally, if you take especially like the last one, which was about paying reparation to Russian paying reparation to Ukraine, half of the African country abstained to that vote. So, and I think it's the only region on the planet where you have so many countries abstaining. This is again like a resurrection of most of the non-aligned movement of the Cold War time. So that gives them some kind of leverage, quote unquote, with Russia, because just as the ambassador just mentioning, the fact that they're that close to Russia and they have not unconditional support of Russia, that could give them some kind of leverage and saying, listen, today Russia is very aggressive on the African continent, is getting involved from an investment, from a security standpoint, a lot in Africa. Is it in your interest to not let the African continent down the way you have done with this whole adventure? So I think that you can, but to go there and think that they can at least broke a ceasefire, I doubt, but who knows? I'm trying to be optimistic.
I want to turn to a letter that has surfaced, of course, in recent days, written by four U.S. lawmakers urging the Biden administration to get tough with South Africa. I'm going to read part of it. It says, we are seriously concerned that hosting the 2023 AGOA Forum in South Africa would serve as an implicit endorsement of South Africa's damaging support for Russia's invasion of Ukraine and possible violation of U.S. sanctions law. These actions by South Africa call into question its eligibility for trade benefits under AGOA due to statutory requirements that beneficiary countries, quote, not engage in activities that undermine United States national security or foreign policy interests. While we understand that the AGOA eligibility review process for 2024 is underway and that the decisions have not yet been made, we question whether a country in danger of losing AGOA benefits should have the privilege of hosting the 2023 AGOA Forum. And of course, that was signed by four U.S. senators from both the Republican and the Democratic parties. Ambassador, what are we to make of this letter? I mean, it does suggest that South Africa is in danger of losing its trade benefits under AGOA. Is this a warning shot to South Africa?
I think it's more than a warning shot. I think it's a call for South Africa to wake up and smell the coffee, so to speak, and the reality of the situation. Now, these four who signed the letter are key leaders. You have the ranking Republican member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. You have Senator Chris Coons, arguably the most passionate Africa advocate in the U.S. Congress, a Democrat. You have the chairman, the Republican chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. You have the ranking Democratic member who was chair before him. So you've got a bipartisan consensus in a town where that's very rare these days. And they're focusing on this. And it's because why? Because we have to look at AGOA criteria. You cited the second criteria, which was that the beneficiary not engage in any activities that undermine U.S. national security or foreign policy interests. But in addition, AGOA was meant for countries that were not in South Africa's income bracket. South Africa actually is in AGOA as an exception to the rule. So that's point one. So it's already AGOA one is not a bilateral agreement or okay. It's a concessionary grant from the United States. South Africa participates by gracious leave of the United States as an exception to the rule. And beyond the review next year, in a way, the review of AGOA eligibility is not as important as the fact that AGOA expires in 2025. So the entire program has to be renewed. And the question is, in the renewal, will South Africa, having violated the current criteria, having been in there by exception, will it be written into the new agenda? And I can say that certainly there's going to be a chorus, and not just these four, questioning whether a country that ships arms on the Lady R to Russia, that has naval exercises with Russia and China on the anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine, that sends its land forces chief to visit Moscow after all this, that sends the ANC Youth League to monitor the farcical illegal referenda to annex parts of sovereign Ukraine. If a country like that is indeed supportive of U.S. policy interests and worthy of this concession, and it's going to be a tough case to make.
Rene, what if you look, if Africans look at the two sides of the ledger right now, we've just been talking about what comes with AGOA, the preferential treatment that South Africa might get. But for other African countries looking at these two sides, what, coming out of the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit and going into the Russia-Africa Summit, what does the United States offer African countries versus Russia?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Already, I would say the first level is, if you look at Russia standing on the African continent, is mainly with the elite and people in power. You don't have a soft power felt in the African continent. Even if a Gallup poll I saw yesterday when was thinking about this, the show shows that in you had 10 points more favorable views of Russia in Africa than you have worldwide. So of course it's an indicator, because Africans are kind of used and sometimes sympathetic to autocratic regime, unfortunately. But I would say back to quickly to this point about the AGOA thing. I mean, yeah, I have to say I was surprised that Chris Coons was even people were talking about him at the Secretary of State at what point, very close to President Biden. Mix also being also such an Africanist was signatory of that letter. But if you look really seriously, it's almost rhetorical, because inside the international development community, it was already a question of Africa, South Africa not being anymore beneficial to the to the AGOA. And if you look at it, true, you have $3 billion exchange, but depending exclusively from AGOA, we're talking about $200 million. So it's quite insignificant for the South African economy. So I do not think, I think it's more a stunt than anything else. It will not have a big impact on South Africa, and I don't think they're really going to make a decision or determine their foreign policy based on the benefit from the AGOA trade facilities.
Ambassador? Without respect to Professor Lake, I'm not sure where he gets his numbers from. Last year, South Africa exported to the U.S. $10.7 billion of goods, largely tariff-free because of AGOA, including 60,000 luxury automobiles, which are value-added. That makes the United States South Africa's second-largest export market at 9% of exports, just 1% behind China, which is the number one, at 10%. Russia, in contrast, last year received under $300 million in exports from South Africa, so it's, which adds up to a fifth of 1%. So the leadership in South Africa would risk virtually 10% of exports versus a fifth of 1% is, to me, beyond irrational.
I'm just going to give you a moment to respond there, Rene. We've got less than a minute left, but very quickly.
Yeah, just to say, I mean, this discussion is already going on in at the State Department and again in the international development community to remove South Africa from AGOA anyway. And this is way before the invasion of Russia. It's really totally marginal. And again, the numbers the ambassador gave are certainly true. I didn't double check them. But again, what depends exclusively from AGOA is minimal.
Gentlemen, fascinating conversation. Please do come back to Straight Talk Africa so we can continue it. I would love to hear what you think as things progress here. Ambassador J.P. Tafam and Rene Lake, thank you both, gentlemen, for your time. And of course, that is where we will leave our show this week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for always listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.